podcasting is easy, but getting people to listen and like it and pay for it, well, that's another story. But the McElroy brothers have it sussed. Justin, Travis and Griffin are the godfathers of podcasting, with over a dozen podcasts between them, as well as a graphic novel series and TV shows. They reach millions of fans. And the brothers offer their collective wisdom about podcasting with their signature humour in the new book, which is called Everybody Has a Podcast Except You. And Justin McElroy joins me now. Hi.
Hi. What a pleasure. Thanks. I don't know what sussed means, but I'm hoping it's good. I'm counting it as a compliment.
Oh, yeah. That's a real New Zealandism, isn't it? Sussed. I've sussed it out. I've got it sussed. Sorted, I guess. It's got it sorted.
Got it. Perfect.
So how does a guy once got fired from a video store become a podcast emperor?
I got started reviewing video games. I used to do that as a freelancer for quite a few different publications, and eventually I started podcasting about video games way back in the early days when there were like 8 podcasts and pretty much such a dearth to listen to that almost anybody could be a success back then. That was in 2008, actually. I started podcasting about video games for Joystick with a Q, which was AOL's now defunct video game blog. And from there, I just started spinning off more podcasts, too many podcasts, some may say. We started My Brother and Me, which is an advice show I do with my brothers, Travis and Griffin. We started that in April 2010. So that's been going on for, I guess, 11 years. Oh, man. Oh, boy. That just first time I said that out loud. Oof. And then we do several others. My wife and I do she's a physician, and we do a medical history podcast called Sawbones.
Wow.
And my brothers and I do a role-playing podcast called The Adventure Zone, where we play a role-playing game and record the story Wow. that we create. And we actually have an annual podcast with two New Zealanders, Tim Batt and Guy Montgomery.
Oh, yeah.
The Worst Idea of All Time.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, you know, we watch and review Paul Blart Mall Cop 2 every American Thanksgiving from now until the end of time. We've each picked a person that when we are deceased will take our role. So we've set this podcast up to run forever.
Yeah.
Pretty great. That's always fun navigating the lag across so many oceans, but yeah. It's something I look forward to every year.
Oh, you and me are managing okay at the moment. Who's your fill-in, by the way? Not to be macabre.
Oh, no, not at all. It's my daughter, and she's 6, so I better hang in there for a little bit, because some of the adult themes of Paul Blart Mall Cop 2 might be a bit over her head.
Hey, what happened to that video store you got fired from, by the way?
You know what? It got closed down as a dance studio now. The entire chain is defunct. All of Blockbuster Videos are defunct except for one that continues to operate in Alaska. All the other ones are shut down. I win. I outlived Blockbuster. So there. Maybe if they'd kept me on, their fortunes would have been different. Who knows?
We've always had radio. Well, we've always had radio. We've had radio for 100 years, and we understand why people love radio. Is it the same thing that draws them to podcasts or something different?
A little bit of both, I think. I think people are drawn to it for some of the same reasons and some different. I think that with radio and podcasts, audio is a very intimate medium, especially when you're hearing someone's voice piped directly into your headphones or car stereo or whatever the case may be. A connection forms, I think, through imagining that person and them sort of living in your head. The connection there can be very strong. We regularly, well, at least used to meet listeners who we'd never met in our lives, but would treat us like friends because we, you know, have been with them through so many things. I think podcasting is a little bit different, maybe even more intimate than radio, where I think radio gives you this sense of connection where you're listening to the same thing as a bunch of other people at the same time. And in that sense, you're a little less alone. I think with podcasting being on demand like it is much more a sense of that intimate connection, sort of a conversation with friends. And that's a very powerful thing. And it's kind of a responsibility that we take really seriously, because if people are going to, let you in to intimate moments like, I don't know, washing the dishes or working out, then I think you owe them your best, personally. And I think that that's one of the things we try to get through in the book.
How do you describe your premiere podcast, My Brother and Me? What's the elevator pitch?
Oh, gosh. You know, I wish we created it before you needed an elevator pitch. These days, back then, there were just 10 podcasts, so you just picked the ones. It is an advice show by people who are not great at giving advice. advice you probably shouldn't follow. But it is the best that we have. Our taglines used to include lines like, we're brothers, we're experts, we're sorry, if that gives you some idea tonally of what we're going for. But it is basically us telling people how to live their lives and the questionable advice that, that results from that.
On your Twitter, you say, quote, I feel an earnest and humble desire and shall till I die to increase the stock of harmless cheerfulness. Is there a hunger out there for just basic decency? Not everyone is looking for a grim murder podcast.
I think there's a balance. I think certainly when things are dark in the world, it is nice to have someone you can turn to or have a show you can turn to, something that just sort of brings you back to that like more positive and uplifting place. Not to get to sort of like, but Dr. I am Pagliacci. Sometimes it can be tough to get to that place where you're, you know, the positive uplifting show, but we make a really good run at it every week. And I feel very proud of that, that we've not descended into something more, I don't know, spiteful. But yeah, I think it's important. I think all, you know, I think there's room for all different opinions and perspectives, but I feel like my gig on the planet is to provide that like sense of positivity and, you know, a little bit of optimism that people can gravitate towards when they need, you know, a dollop of that.
Do you think we should pause for a few seconds while people Google, but Dr. I am Pagliacci?
No, that's the problem with podcasting. You can't, you're always moving forward like a shark. You can't slow down. No dead air. That's our rule. You just keep talking no matter what happens.
Okay. What's the no bummers policy?
That was something that we started. You know, what's funny about that? So the no bummers policy was a rule that we started when we started doing live shows. We'd been recording the show for a couple of years when we started touring it live. And we have worked through so many different iterations of integrating live audience questions into our live show, which is already terrifying because it's completely unscripted and we're just kind of making it up as we go, obviously. But we started asking the audience for questions, and just one too many times we had someone come up on stage who, you know, was dealing with something very intense or sad or serious, which, I mean, we've all been there, of course, but we just couldn't go there with them during a live show setting. It was very much a you know, a mood killer for people that paid to be entertained. And it is also an awkward situation where you're like trying to, you know, make light of this person's suffering, which is miserable. Now we have done more. We have room for quote unquote bummers in our regular recorded program, because I think we can handle, you know, there's room for sort of ebbs and flows in energy in that setting. But in a live show, it's just a real mood killer. So we had to make that rule. We actually had a company in Portland make us some microphones and engraved into the audience mic that we used for a long time. It had no bummers written on the rim just so they could look right at it and remember, please do not kill the energy of this show that we've worked so hard to cultivate.
Yeah, not that you don't care. It's just maybe not the right format.
I care. I wouldn't want my brothers to do it. And I love my brothers, but if they were like, and so anyway, I went to the doctor's office today and I'm like, stop right there. Stop. We're trying to do a fun show. Please. You're killing me.
I'm speaking to
we
Justin.
We also had to stop. It's always evolving. We had to start trying to keep people from getting engaged at our show, at the live shows. It was at first it was very sweet. And then we had one show where there were three engagements. Like, people just kept getting up and getting engaged. We're like, okay, this was great. We'll never do this again, because this is a very, odd energy that we are getting here. So yeah, we try to avoid proposals now. We've had to explicitly avoid proposals.
I'm talking to Justin McElroy, whose book is called Everybody Has a Podcast Except You. There are over a dozen podcasts between Justin and his brothers, and in the book, the brothers offer their wisdom about podcasting with plenty of humor as well, as you can tell. Were you sad to hear that Yahoo Answers is shutting down?
That was a heartbreaker. Yeah, we've used Yahoo Answers. We knew we wanted to do an advice show when we started back in 2010, but we didn't have the audience to advise. So we really leaned on Yahoo Answers, you know, where people would just sort of blindly submit their queries. We really relied on that as a source of questions of people to advise, with the added benefit that they would almost certainly never hear it. So we could kind of just let loose with whatever came to mind first. So yeah, after 10 years, it was very sad that Yahoo Answers was not just, not only did Yahoo stop updating Yahoo Answers, they removed it from the internet. You can't see it anymore. And like, if you think about the millions, if not, you know, billions that Google is paying to keep YouTube, all these YouTube videos up, all Yahoo had to do is keep like what is essentially an extremely long text file hosted on servers. And not even that would they do. They were so unwilling to continue to be associated with this brand.
Can you give people an idea of what that service was? I mean, what's the best question you ever had from Yahoo Answers?
I mean, there's a lot of great questions. It was the sort of questions where people would be too embarrassed to ask those that they knew in real life. So just, I'm looking at a list of ones that we've used on the show before, like smoke coming from belly button ? I mean, I think I might have Pepsi stuck in my lungs. What should I do? Like, it is weird that you needed the internet to help you with that one. Can you train a cat to know when it's your birthday? I mean, that's a, that one hits hard. That's rough. What does an owl look like and why? It's this great place for people who don't know how to, I don't know, search engines are beyond them and they'd rather just ask strangers to do the heavy lifting.
Plenty of the fun in these podcasts come from the chemistry you have with your brothers, although I should note that there is chemistry of another kind at play from time to time. Can you tell us how you came up with the idea of trying to get into the sequel to the movie Trolls?
Yeah, we're in Portland to do a live show, and in Portland, this is more common, but it was a rarity at the time that weed was legal and weed edibles were legal. We had listeners just brought us piles of the stuff to the show, and we had a day off the next day, so we went back to our hotel room and just ate a bunch of weed, just gobbled it right down, and got pretty high. And I revealed to my brothers that my sister-in-law Riley, who was a teen at the time, said that there were a bunch of YouTubers who had cameo, prominent YouTubers who had cameos in the first Trolls movie, just like voice cameos. And I started thinking, while under the influence of edibles, that if they would do YouTube people, why not podcasters to get cameos in the sequel? And this idea seemed so strong to me at the time, and my brothers, as we were all under the influence of marijuana edibles, that we just hit the record button and started plotting a plan for how we were going to get into this movie. And we recorded, that was how we recorded the first episode of the McElroy Brothers Will Be in Trolls 2, which was sort of our called shot of a podcast that we did for a year and a half or so before finally, somehow, against all odds, appearing in the movie Trolls World Tour, as it came to be known, in a bevy of inconsequential roles.
They say that George Martin was the fifth Beatle, and there is a fourth McElroy brother. Maybe not one that people would expect. Lin-Manuel Miranda, the creator of the musical Hamilton. How did that happen?
I mean, it was very strange. It was one of the times, right around the same time, We found out that we're on a podcast network called Maximum Fun, and every year we have a donor pledge drive where we try to get people to donate to the network. And then we noticed one of our donors during that was Elizabeth Gilbert, who was the author of Eat, Pray, Love. And that was already so bizarre. Like, I'm Justin McElroy. Why is the author of Eat, Pray, Love listening to my podcast? I didn't know Liz at the time. She's extremely funny, and it makes perfect sense. I mean, it's extremely flattering, I guess. But then we started getting tweets from Lynn, who we just knew as the creator of In the Heights at the time, which was very flattering. Mm. But we tweeted back and forth for quite a while. I guess this would have been, 2014, 2015, before Hamilton. And then we came up to New York to say hi, and he told us about this, musical he was writing about the Federalist Papers. And we were like, oh, that's bizarre. Okay, best of luck, bud. It sounds like a tough sell. And then, flash forward to all of a sudden you're like, seeing your friend on everywhere. I mean, on every TV station, on every Twitter feed, everywhere is this guy. And he's being hailed as a genius, which I think is a fair praise to lay at Lynn's feet. I think he is a genius. I don't know what he's doing with us, but he's genuinely just, I mean, I can say this as somebody who has known him for quite a while. I have heard Hamilton, I've heard his other work, and I think he is an absolute 100% genius. And I am still every day more impressed by what a genuinely kind and empathetic, energetic, sweet person that he is. I mean, we talk fairly regularly, and he's just a really, really good person. That's always nice to know that somebody who you respect that much is also a real, real good egg.
Justin, have we reached peak podcast?
That's a really good question, actually. Have we reached peak podcast? I mean, I will say this. I feel like podcasting can expand in one of two ways. Is the way I think about it is one of the superpowers of podcasts is that because they are infinitely variable and fairly easy to produce, they can serve increasingly small niche audiences. So as the number of podcasts continue to grow, you can get more focused, more specific. You're already seeing a rise in sort of like local podcasting, podcasts for a hospital or a school. This is the podcast for people who go to this school, increasingly more niche. And I think that like there's always more specificity you can draw down in there. One of my favorite shows is called Whatever Happened to Pizza at McDonald's. And it's literally just a guy calling different McDonald's to ask if they still have pizza and why they don't have pizza anymore. It's extremely specific. And I think that is one way where podcasting can grow, right? More people can get involved in the creation and more people can make increasingly more specific shows. But I think the real like expansion opportunity for podcasting is making more people aware of what podcasts are and how to listen to them. I mean, there is a dizzying number of people who don't know what a podcast is. I still have to explain to people, especially my area. I live in West Virginia, which is comparatively rural in America, and with an older population. And I continuously have to explain like what it is I do, and where that happens. Where it occurs. Like it's not on the radio. You can just listen to it through the internet. According to the most recent statistic in the U.S., about 50% of the population have even listened to a podcast. So, I mean, there's the opportunity. I mean, I think for if you look at the future of podcasting, it's that. It's how do you bring more people in rather than how do you just, make more shows. I think it's how do you bring more people into that ecosystem.
Hey, great chat. I've loved it. I should tell people who are now inspired to listen to your podcast that you advise beginning at around episode 150. I don't know if you want to add anything to that, but it often happens with TV shows. We just started Parks and Rec and someone had said, start with season 2, and we've done it and it works. So are you sticking with that advice about episode 150?
I think you can, my brother and me, I think you can start right now. It's going to be more relevant. If you like it, go back, work your way backwards. That would be my my advice. I wouldn't go all the way back to the beginning for almost any podcast because, you know, they're always learning. You know, the tech will improve. Yeah. Usually if it's been run a long time, you know, the hosts will improve. You hope the format will continue to evolve. Like, I don't know. At least for the kinds of shows we make, I usually think starting at the now is preferable to starting at the beginning.
The book is called Everybody Has a Podcast Except You. And I've been speaking to the wonderful Justin McElroy. Thank you.
It's my pleasure.